Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And Rick from LizzieBorden.com, Lizzie-Borden.com, the manager tour guide for this. This, by the way, is maybe the greatest compromise in the history of bed and breakfast in a wife.
In August of 1892, Lizzie Borden became part of pop culture mythology when she was arrested and tried for the axe murders of her father and stepmother in Fall River, Massachusetts. She was eventually acquitted of the murders after a trial that made sensational headlines across the country. And now you can stay in the house where these grisly murders were committed. Please welcome Lizzie Borden, House General Manager and Tour Guide, Rick.
Rick, welcome to the show.
Oh, good morning. Glad to be here.
Just
for a correction, I am a manager of the gift shop, and I do tours as well. I started as a tour guide about 6 years ago, and now they have me running the gift shop, and I still give tours as well.
Well, how does one fall into this awesome gig?
Oh, well, my wife actually started working here in 2008, and I joined her when I retired in 2013, so it's a great retirement job, I'll tell you that much. It's a wonderful house. The murders happened in 1892, of course, 127 years ago. Long time, but we finally got the house open back in 1996 to the public as a bed and breakfast and a museum now because we have so many artifacts in the house.
It's an amazing place to go, and I don't care for bed and breakfast. Like, that's not going to ever be my thing, but if you got to go and your wife's making you go somewhere, I say this is the one to go to. We just talked to a guy who was on a motorcycle trip, and he said he absolutely loved it, was by himself on this long East Coast ride, and stopped in and just, it really was, he said you guys gave an incredible tour.
Yeah, the tour at night's a lot longer than the day tour. The day tour is about an hour long. The night tour is over 2 hours long. And sometimes it goes up to 3 hours, depending on how people get into it and ask questions and get involved in it, you know. But it's an unique experience. Not too many people can say they slept at a house that's where two murders took place and reputed to be haunted as well. And believe me, it is haunted.
Really? See, that was my next question to you, because I have always sought out places that should be haunted. People would say they were haunted, from the catacombs in Paris to the Church of Bones to, you know, the crypts underneath the castle to as many places I could find, you know, to, you know, Alcatraz, across the board, just whatever you could, you know, think would be where tortured souls might be. And
right.
I've never felt anything. So I'm always curious as to, is it real or not?
Well, I can tell you my experiences in the house. Yeah, I never believed it myself until I started working here. My wife would come home and tell me stories, and I said, "Oh, you're full of baloney." And finally, I spent a night with her about 2 years after she started working here, and we were all alone in the house, just her and I. And you know, the owners let us have the run of the house, and she had borrowed a bunch of equipment from a friend of hers that was investigating, and she had all these gadgets, and she gave me this digital temperature gauge. We'd gone through the entire house. We weren't getting anything. Around 3 o'clock in the morning, we're sitting in the murder room where Andrew was murdered, and she says, "Well, there's nothing happening. It's not like they're going to come out on cue, you know." I said, "Well, I understand." I said, "But, you know, you've been asking all the questions. Let me ask you a question." So she says, "Go ahead." So I stand up, and I get this digital temperature gauge that she's given me. That's all I had, digital temperature gauge. We went through the entire house. The base temperature in the entire house was 72 degrees. It was in February, so the heat was on. And so I stand up and I said, "I don't believe there are any spirits in the house. If there's at least one, then prove it to me. Make the temperature drop 10 degrees. And as soon as I said that, it starts going down. And between me and the radiator, it felt like a column of cold air developed. And I was shaking, to be honest with you. I was just stunned. I'm looking down and it's going down. Each second it's going down a degree. I looked at my wife and said, "Oh, my God." I show her the device, you know, and she says, "Wow." I turn back. It's already down to 60. It's gone down 12 degrees in 12 seconds, and I'm freaking out. I said, "Okay, thank you very much." Went right back up to 72 degrees, no cold air, And as my wife is saying, wow, what did you think of that? I'm grabbing my jacket. I'll meet you in the car.
Yeah, well, for real. So tell me this. So why do you go back? Do you think that they can harm you? Do you think that they're an angry spirit? I mean,
no,
obviously it was a violent crime.
No, I haven't come across anything that I found in the house that it would be detrimental or dangerous or anything like that. They're here. We're just sharing space with them. If there are any spirits in the house, it's Andrew and Abby because of the way they were murdered. I know they're definitely here. And Andrew is the most dominant spirit in the house. Unless he wants you to talk, he's not going to let you talk. And we don't know how many spirits are in the house. On the third floor, the attic area, where Bridget Sullivan had her room, I got poked in my left shoulder up there in that room one night. I didn't care for that too much. My wife has had several experiences. The other guys have had many experiences in the house as well. But the third floor seems to be an area where a lot of the tour guides do not want to go up there alone. And shadow figures are seen up there. And we've had some extraordinary pictures taken in the house. And the night tour, when we talk about the history of the house and the history of the crime, we also talk about the history of the paranormal things. And we've got pictures that have been taken over the years that are absolutely incredible. There's one, we had one young lady who spent the night with her mom in Andrew and Abby's bedroom. The next morning, she went outside to take pictures, took a picture of the window where they spent the night, and there was a face in the window when she saw the picture developed. And it turns out, when we got a close-up of that picture, it pretty much looks like Abby Borden.
So what was the
kind of freaky.
What was the final theory as to why Lizzie Borden did what she did?
Well, we don't know if she did what she did. She was found not guilty.
Right.
And there are other suspects that people don't realize. The uncle spent the night here the night before the murders. And the uncle, the people that were murdered in the house was Andrew Borden and Abby Borden. Abby Borden was the second Mrs. Borden. The first Mrs. Borden, her name was Sarah Anthony Morse Borden. Her brother John came and visited the house the night before the murders. And he was an original suspect. He didn't have an overnight bag or a change of clothes for the next day. Very suspicious. And he was from Iowa. Hastings, Iowa, not too far from Villisca. Anyway, back when that murder happened in Villisca, they thought they went to him first.
So you
and
think...
he had already passed away, so he wasn't involved in that one.
But that murder house, I mean, that's interesting, because you think, okay, now we're talking about a serial killer.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's an impossibility. I mean, we just don't know. Circumstances of the crime, there were only two people in the house when Abby was murdered, Lizzie and her stepmom. Now, Lizzie claimed she may have been in the kitchen. If she were in the kitchen or in the dining room, she would have heard something upstairs. But she also said she was in the basement for about 2 or 3 minutes, in the washroom in the basement. And that's a possibility. She maybe has been making noises down there and didn't hear what was going on upstairs. That's a possibility, you know. But we just don't know.
Yeah, but I don't know that people come in and murder another person the way these people were bludgeoned and murdered in such a horrific fashion with an axe. In 2 or 3 minutes. You know what I'm saying? You think about how short a time that really is. Someone enters a home, does what they're doing.
Abby's murder probably took only about 25 seconds. Man.
Sure.
It was fast. It was furious. It was out of control rage. So it either had to be a family member or somebody else that she knew. And she knew the assailant because she was already in the room and this person entered the room while she was there. So she had made the bed. You know, every movie I've seen, they show her in the process of making the bed. The bed was already made. The bed was already made. The room was pristine. I mean, she cleaned the room, and she was ready to leave it there, and she got two pillow slips. So she ran down to the stairs, got two pillow slips. She actually had a conversation with Lizzie, and Lizzie mentioned it at her inquest testimony, that Abby had told her she cleaned the room, made the bed, she was going to lock it up so nobody would disturb her, because she had friends come over the following week. So then she came back upstairs, and obviously when she's up there, someone comes into the room, and she had to have known this person because there's no signs of a struggle. Bed's perfectly made. I mean, if this person was a threat to her, as that person was coming around the end of the bed, she would have been jumping over the bed to get the hell out of there. The bed's perfectly made. There's no signs of a struggle. And she had no defense wounds, absolutely none. So she was caught completely off guard by this person that she knew and probably even trusted for all we know.
Yeah, no, the no defense wounds, yeah. If it's nothing on their hands, like, yeah, absolutely, because instinctively you'd raise your hands.
Right. Now, see, the other thing is this. Of all the wounds that she had, she was struck 19 times. And 17 times to the back of the head, they found one in between her spine, which probably was the last one. But the first blow, they believe, was on the left side of her head. So whoever did this was probably right-handed, and it happened so quickly she didn't even know what hit her. That first strike hit her on the side of the head, and she's spinning, the skin just ripping off the side of her skull. She falls to the floor, And then she either pushed forward or fell forward. They say, and then straddled her body and continued the assault to the back of her head. If the first strike didn't kill her, the second one surely did.
Yeah.
It struck 19 times.
And it's striking.
The interesting thing about this case that nobody likes to talk about or nobody seems to talk about is that on both murder scenes, and this is the reason why the police believe it's the same person that committed both crimes, both murder scenes, there's no trail of blood leaving the scene of the crime. So whoever did this cleaned up right then and there. So this was intentional. This was personal, and it was out of control rage.
Well, then that takes us out of the... That takes us out of that 2 to 3 minutes theory then, right? Because if you have to clean up right then it had to be Lizzie Borden.
Not necessarily. She could have been in the basement of the house.
But you couldn't clean up blood, kill two people in two or three minutes.
John Morse, the uncle, was a butcher by trade.
Okay. But those are carpeted floors.
A professional would know how to clean up right then and there.
Sure.
I'm thinking the uncle probably had something to do with it.
Yeah, maybe so. And I'll tell you, it really does bring it into a historical position when you're looking at the crime scene photographs. That I know you have them there, and I found some online as well. With upstairs, she's lying in front of that chest of drawers, but you can see the reflection of the box camera that they were taking on the tripod.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing in itself, yeah.
Yeah, and it really puts it into historical.
The time we're talking about, Victorian era.
Yeah.
There's also a picture of her that looks like she's on her knees, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's actually not. She's actually laying flat. It gives the illusion because, don't forget, this is 1892. You want to take a crime scene photo, oh, that's fine. This is the first murder trial in the United States where crime scene photos were used in court as evidence. And it happened totally by accident because when the marshal came in, the brutality of the crime was so intense, he said, nobody's going to believe this. Let's bring the photographer and take some pictures of this. And then ended up using those pictures in the court, and they allowed them to. So it was the first time in United States history that crime scene photos were used in court as evidence in a murder case.
And the father, he was on that couch downstairs, and he looks like he was just sitting there when somebody walked up and nailed him. I mean, like there was no, he never got off the ground. I mean, he was on the couch.
He probably didn't even know what hit him.
No. It's really very gruesome.
He was struck 11 times. 11 times to the face, and one of those strikes hit him right in his eye socket. His eye actually rested on his cheek.
Was
another blow almost severed his nose completely off his face. He died instantly, I'm sure.
Okay, so if we follow that, maybe it was Lizzie, maybe not. Was there any reason it would have been Lizzie? Was there ever any?
Abby was a stepmom.
Right.
Yeah, and 5 years earlier, her half-sister, who she was very close to, her and her family were having some difficulties, and she approached Andrew. Andrew bought a house and put in his wife Abby's name, and Abby let her half-sister and their family live there rent-free, but he didn't tell the girls about it. The girls found out, by total strangers, that he was giving property to the in-laws, and they were outraged. This is like 5 years leading up to the murders. And it was at that time, too, that Lizzie coincidentally stopped calling her stepmother mother and began calling her Mrs. Borden.
Interesting. And
was away.
So you can come up here, spend the night.
The only two people around the house when this happened was Lizzie and the maid.
Right. And where was the maid at the time?
At the time that Abby was being murdered, she was outside on the south side of the house washing windows, and she was actually having a conversation with the maid next door, so she had a pretty good alibi. When Andrew was murdered, after Andrew had come into the house, Bridget, the maid, actually let him in, and after he came in, he went upstairs for a couple minutes to his room. While he was up in his room, Lizzie approached Bridget and said, you look awfully tired. She said, yeah, tough day. She said, well, why don't you, do this later on. Go upstairs and take a nap. And she went upstairs to her room to take a nap. So she was out of the way. So Lizzie would have had an opportunity to kill her father.
Wow. So now we're back towards that. Yeah, see,
the strange thing about that, though, is that, when Lizzie finds her father, it's only minutes after that there are witnesses in the house. Mrs. Churchill, the next-door neighbor, arrives. And Dr. Bone arrives. The blood's still seeping from Andrew's wounds. And yet Lizzie does not appear to have any blood whatsoever on her. It doesn't even look like she washed any blood off. And that was the mystery of how could she have done this and not get any blood on her. And the jury had a tough time with that. I think that was the one reason why they found her not guilty.
Was there a situation where she burned a dress?
There was. The funeral happened on a Saturday. And So here's the thing, and the jury weren't likely aware of this. On that Saturday, when everyone was at the funeral, there was an army of police officers in the house looking for anything but blood. Well, this dress that she supposedly burned was hanging in the coal closet next to the stove. And she did have a dress that had paint stains all over it, a dress that was made for her like 4 months before the murders. And on the day of the final fitting, workmen were painting the hallways and the stairs and all that, and she brushed up against the wall and ruined the dress instantly. So there was a dress with paint on it. Now, did it have paint and blood on it? That's another question, you know. But Emma was there at doing dishes that Sunday morning, the morning after the funeral, and Alice Russell, a dear friend of the girls who spent the weekend with them to help them get through the funeral, she was also in the house. She came downstairs and witnessed Lizzie putting the dress into the stove, into the fire. And she said to her, this is probably the worst thing you could have ever done. And Lizzie said, well, you saw me doing it. Why didn't you stop me? But at that point, of course, it's too late. But did it have blood and paint on it? We don't know. I mean, neither Alice nor Emma ever said that they saw any blood on the dress, but they certainly knew it was a dress with paint on it. And back, you know, you have to understand, too, back in those days, that was a common thing for a woman to do. I mean, you didn't have trash pickup. You either bring your trash, you bury your trash, or, you know, rip it up, use it for rags, whatever. But she burned it, you know.
This is, I got to tell you, we do a lot of interviews. You really, you know this so well. I mean, you really know this beautifully, and you make it very interesting. It's, I might come up there sometime, man. I don't know, next time I'm going to be in Fall River, Massachusetts, but it's a super interesting story. Yeah.
Check it out. It's 230 2nd Street, the address now, for GPS people. The historical address is 92. They changed the numbers on the streets early 1900s, I believe. But it's number here at the house is 508-675-7333. You can go online at the website at www.lizzie-borden.com, and on there they'll have everything there for you. If you want to do the tours, you can hit the tours, it'll show you, give you, you know, the hours and the rates and all that kind of thing, and also for the reservations, just reservations will give you the availability. And so anyway, it's easy to book
well. And Lizzie Borden's
is very difficult because we usually book and we're all sold out.
Yeah, well, Lizzie Borden's grave is only, it looks to be maybe a mile or two away.
It's 0.9 miles up the road from us.
Yeah, no, at Oak Grove Cemetery.
I'm just and Maplecroft too. The house they moved to afterwards. That's a gorgeous place, and we own that property now as well. We're trying to get it open the last couple of years. We're having some difficulties with variances and stuff like that, so I don't know when they're going to get it open, but hopefully.
All right. Well, look, Rick, I appreciate your time, man. It's a good Halloween deal. If you got to go to a bed and breakfast, no brothers, problem. I mean, that's the one that seems to be the most fun. Hold on one second. Yeah, I still don't want to do a bed and breakfast, but at least that sounds interesting.
That's different.
And he's good because he'll debate you.
Yeah, he's engaged.
He threw me a couple different ways because I'm like, okay, it was her. And then I'm like, well, it could have been the crazy cousin or whatever.
He's like,
the
don't
uncle.
Forget about the butcher.
Yeah, but then your butcher's looking. I don't care if you're a butcher or not. You can't clean carpet blood
right.
Yet like that fast, not in 2 to 3 minutes. So that takes you back to her. But then you go, but there was a maid.
Right.
So who kills people while your maid's there?
Well, and he was like, months before, the girl stopped calling her mom.
If you're thinking about it, right, but who kills somebody when the maid's in the house? And then you think, well, now I got to go kill the maid. If you're that diabolical, if you're planning everything out, right?
Right?
If you go, okay, this was a planned out, well thought out murder. Like she wanted to get away with it. She didn't just flip into some nutso rage and just start doing it.
Well, I always kind of knew the story, but when we were going to have this guy on the other day, I read a ton of stuff on it. It has to be Lizzie Borden because, I mean, it could have been the uncle, but it's like you say, always follow the money. And it was about the money. It was about with the uncle and dealing with the dad that they were having some business dealings come up. And like the dad had sold a couple things to Lizzie and his sister and they wanted to sell them back to him. And so it became a problem. Then once he got remarried to this Abby chick, and that's why she started calling her Mrs. Borden instead of mom. And so it's too personal. Like the crime is too personal. Abby was hit in the back of the head and they do show her skull photos and then just stabbed, I think 19 times, hit repeatedly with an axe. And then the dad was left on the couch. They caught him while he was asleep
on
the couch.
You weren't just trying to off him. You were raging.
Well, you can look at the dad. You can look at the crime scene photo. You were trying to erase his face. His eye was split in half. The eyeball, they hit so hard through the ocular cavity that eye was split in half. Like, that's I'm erasing you from this planet.
Jake just kind of freaked me out right there.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.